there's a theater festival up in Massachusetts called Williamstown. It attracts a lot of wealthy Manhattanites who are vacationing. And I was driving around once with Sam Rockwell and Philip Seymour Hoffman. I had this farting app. I plugged it into my speakers and I would crank it up and I would stop and ask these wealthy people in khakis and salmon shirts where, you know, the theater was. And they would say, I think it's over. And then I would, and they started raising their voices to, you know, give me the directions over the farts. It's over. It's, you turn a left here. Rarely have I heard two people laugh as hard as Phil and Sam were laughing in the backseat. I mean, obviously they had ducked down. You know, if these people had seen them, they would have seen two of America's greatest actors cracking up over farts.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
From Wondery, this is Justin Long, and you are listening to Life is Short.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
Here, as always, with my brother, Christian.
Yes. Hello, everybody.
A man that I've known for 37 years.
I don't know why it's so weird to me that you refer to me as a man. I don't think you've ever done that before.
I've never done that.
I literally
don't
think
when it came out of my mouth.
You've ever referred to me as a man. But I don't know why that's weird because I'm certainly
I don't think of you
I'm
as a man.
But oh, thanks.
Like a man. When I think of a man, I think of like a bounty.
Like a manly man?
Yeah.
Not all men have to be manly men.
Like Mr. Clean.
That's what you think of for a man?
Well, like a lumberjack.
Like a shiny cartoon.
Yeah, like bald cartoon.
No, I understand your conception of masculinity now. Okay, I'm not a manly man, but I'm a man regardless, so
you
I shouldn't be surprised that you refer to me
well,
as
well,
you've
never
one.
Called me a man.
I know.
I don't think of myself as a man.
This is a much bigger problem, yeah, I'm realizing.
So every week we're going to unravel problems like this.
So this very special interview was actually the very first one we recorded. So it will always hold a special place in our hearts. Sam is someone that we chose as the first guest because of how well we know him and how comfortable we are with him. And we thought that would be much easier.
Easiest. And comfortable.
Comfortable.
Sam has also been a part of, he was in the first movie I did. He was in the first professional play I did. Christian and I wrote a movie a couple years ago and he was in that. I mean,
he was part of your first sexual experience.
That's right. He was in my first fivesome. Sam has been a friend of mine, a very dear friend of mine for over 20 years now. And he was kind enough to do this, obviously before it was a show, before it was a thing at all. And so he didn't have to do it. He's now at a point in his career where he can do anything he wants. And I just really appreciated him coming on.
And he showed up looking very gaunt and bald.
Oh yeah, you hadn't seen him in that.
I hadn't seen him. So he was shooting Fosse Verdon on FX. So I was immediately thrown off by how different he looked.
What did he look like? You said he looked like
He always looks a little bit like a bird. He just looked like a thinner bird.
Like a plucked.
He looked very plucked and tiny, but he always looks different. I mean, it kind of made sense to me that, oh, he's playing Bob Fosse in this thing, and he looks like a totally different person what he does, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
totally.
He's a chameleon. I hate to use it, but
it applies. It really does apply. And I now can't wait, as his friend, for many reasons, I can't wait till he plays like Mario Batali or somebody because I...
Mario Batali's comeback story.
Or his demise story. They'll cover everything in the Batali biopic, but it'll be fun to watch him eat a lot and to just see him as a heavy person. And so the difficulty in interviewing him was that so much of what we share is personal, is kind of like nights out and drinking and, you know.
My perspective is that I've been out with you guys and I've seen people come up to you and kind of treat you like a zoo animal and like a piece of meat. And they're like, oh, you're the guy from Waiting. And they, you know, can I get a picture? And they're kind of like hostile, like aggressive sometimes. And then with him, they're like, I'm sorry to bother you. I'm a huge fan of your work. Keep on like providing the world with your art, you know, and with you, it's like, gonna get a selfie. So he's
tussling my hair.
Yeah. He's always been like a quote unquote cool, respected, obviously gifted actor. But now it's weird in the last year or two since he's become this like mainstream, like award winning, Oscar winning, good actor, which, So you're going to talk to him about that.
Yeah.
How that's changed.
Yeah. A testament to his character and who he is as a person and as a friend is that he, from my perspective, has remained unchanged throughout all of this, all the hoopla, you know, all the award stuff and now becoming our Gary Oldman.
He's great. And he's, spoiler alert, he's great. And yeah. Fosse Verdon.
Bob Fosse, the famous choreographer from the 50s, 60s, 70s. And we will talk about his career, his whole career from Boxer Moonlight to his most recent role as W in Vice. And we'll talk about roles that he didn't take, which I always think is interesting with those great actors. I was nervous as hell doing this, but I'm excited for you to hear it. We'll be right back with Sam Rockwell right after the break.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, ooh, this ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
Okay, so we're rolling. This, we can cut all this out.
What kind
out,
of
right?
bull jive is this, man?
Well, based on that sentence, you all know my guest is Sam Rockwell. And that's a classic Sam Rockwell sentence.
What kind bull of bull jive? Jive? Well, actually, this guy down at this gym I go, he says we should bring bull jive back.
I don't know
if it was ever there, but I like it.
I didn't know it was a thing ever.
I like it. Let's make it a thing.
But what does it mean?
Bull jive.
Oh, like bull roar, like bullshit.
Yeah, like bullshit, but bull jive.
We can curse on this, right? Yeah. Okay. I'm getting the thumbs up.
I don't know, but I like it. It's bull 70s, jive. and I like anything 70s.
My mom the other day said, "You're so excited, your ass is gonna water." She said it sarcastically.
That's really good. I like that. And what does that even mean?
I don't know. And I said to her, "What?" I said that very thing. What does that mean? She's like, "You know, that's a thing you used to say all the time." And I said, "I've never heard those words together." And she said it sarcastically, like, "Oh yeah, I'm so excited, my ass is gonna water."
That's amazing.
She said, "You know,
does that mean like you have the runs, or what does that mean?"
I've never thought of having a watery ass as a good thing. But I've known you for about 20 years, and I guess...
Is it 20 years? Is it more than 20? Yeah.
It'll be 20 this year, April's. No, it'll be 20. Galaxy Quest we shot in the fall. What was it?
Is that 20? Is that 20 years?
Fall of 1999, summer of 1999. And so what... That's yes. when I... And I had heard people talking about you, I remember, on the way to set. You know, of course, Tim Allen and Sigourney Weaver were people that I knew, but... I remember hearing your name and actors. I just dropped out of school, so I was around a lot of young actors and
Vassar?
At Vassar, yeah. Yeah. So everybody was kind of talking about you but I was of course excited to see Sigourney Weaver and these big stars, you know, and you were the one guy on the set that really took me under your wing and I could like relate to and we would we became pals, but
we were close enough in age
right.
that it was that it was cool. It was like, it made sense.
Yeah. Also, I didn't know you then. And then I got to know you. And then we did a play about a year later. And during that time, I watched Box of Moonlight and Lawn Dogs and Safe Men. And I really, I became a fan. So we were friends initially. And then I wanted to know all these things that I guess I never asked you. So now I can ask you. When you did Box of Moonlight, would you say that was the first... was that the first the moment that you felt like, oh, now I can be an actor and I'm no longer?
Yeah, that was the one of the first jobs after delivering burritos on a bicycle. I guess that was well, no, I'd done
you
a
were
couple
in New
of
York.
It was in New York, And I got in this car accident. I messed up my hand, and we were waiting for the money. And I was doing restaurant jobs, but I was starting to do more commercials and movies, and I was starting to get work, episodics, Law and Order.
Uh-huh.
And then I waited a long time for them to get the financing. Finally got John Turturro. That led to Jerry and Tom, the movie with Saul Rubinick, and that led to Safeman, and that led to Lawn Dogs.
Huh, okay.
And I was going to do G.I. Jane, and I dropped out of the boot camp because it was just getting... I just had to get out of there. And
it was intense boot camp.
It was fun, actually, but I was at that time very skinny. I had no body fat, and we were in the water, and I was like, I just couldn't handle the cold. Uh-huh. I was just couldn't handle the water.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, this is going to suck. For a long time. And I missed my girlfriend at the time, Sarita. And
are those parts, are they appealing in to you? I mean,
war films?
Yeah.
Not really. I don't find going to Morocco with a bunch of dudes really and getting Montezuma's revenge. I mean, I like hanging out with a bunch of dudes, but I don't love traveling. Uh-huh. I'm not a big traveler. Are you a big traveler?
Yeah, I like to travel. I like the gypsy lifestyle. I like living out of it. I like it less now than I did when I was in my 20s. That was the.
But if you go to Australia, it's got to be a good part, right? Or if somebody says South Africa, you're like, yay, it doesn't matter what the part is.
See, if it were a war film, then you think, like, I just imagine you wait around for like 3 weeks and then you do a day where you're like, get down. And, you know.
Yeah. Phil and Steve Zahn and I used to joke about the thin red line.
Phil Hoffman. Yeah, yeah.
And Steve Zahn. And we were all up for that. And I remember he said, yeah. I don't know about that one. Like, if you show up for that one, you want to go all the way. Like, you want to have a big
part.
You
want to be in every frame.
When I met Justin, he did the most amazing Phil Hoffman impersonation and Mark Wahlberg in Boogie Nights, and I made him do it in front of Phil at a Mexican restaurant called El Compadre after we saw, what was that shark movie?
We saw Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah.
We saw Deep Blue Sea.
This is an example of how
I didn't know anyone really in LA, and you invited me out. I mean, it seems like a simple thing now, but like you were just like, hey man.
You were adorable.
You want to go see, I was eager. You know, I was like, I'll be a good friend.
You were so starstruck by Phil because you had just seen Boogie Nights.
Yeah, I was. I was obsessed with Phil. And Phil was God.
He was. He really was. And he still is.
And he still is.
You know, he's our guy.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. But I remember when he showed up that day and you didn't really give me any warning. He was wearing an Allman Brothers Band shirt. I remember it really clearly.
Oh, at this movie, at the Cinemarama Dome.
Yeah, I think you said, as you often do, because you're not a name, you don't drop names. Like, this is a famous where you're just like, hey, my, well, you do, only when you're on podcasts. But you were like, hey, my friend Phil is coming. And you know, Phil, and I said, and I had to kind of get it out of you and I freaked out. And when he showed up, that's Phil Hoffman. Holy shit. It was like, here was a guy who, I looked up to and all that. And we went to see this movie. It's kind of a dumb movie, that shark movie. And Tim Allen was laughing, you know, and then Phil would laugh every time Tim laughed. And so I found myself just watching Phil and Tim. And they were making each other laugh because they were laughing at how bad it was.
That's right.
And then, you're right. We went out to El Compadre afterwards, and Sam did the thing that you do with me often, which is you've set me up for impressions, which I love doing, and you had me do it for Phil. And when I first, and I was too chicken shit to do it when you first did it, when you said, hey, Phil, you guys, he does a great impression of you. It's awesome. Oh, my God. And so, The Phil impression was, I do remember what it was.
It was Mark Wahlberg and him in Boogie Nights.
It was that scene.
Yeah.
Where Phil gets the car and he wants to impress Dirk Diggler.
And he ends up crying in the car.
So, you know, I was afraid to do it at first. And then we were drinking so much tequila.
I know.
To the point where I launched into it unsolicited. I remember you were like, it came out of nowhere and I was just like, all right, I'll do it. Yeah, I'll do it. And I just started the impression, you must have been a car, Derek. Like, I want to make sure you liked it, right?
Yeah, he was like stone faced, wasn't he?
He was. Everybody at the table was laughing, and Phil was kind of stone faced. And years later, he claimed he wasn't. He said, "No, I thought it was funny, you know." But at the time, I remember him saying, "That's just me from Boogie Nights. That's not how I talk." And then I to redeem myself, I remember doing, because Phil is very close to. He's very close to Ted Levine. With Ted Levine, it's like, same register. Was she a great big fan person? You put the lotion
but
in the
But is that Ted Levine in Silence of the Lambs, or is that Ted Levine all the time? Well, I think that's Ted Levine in Silence of the Lambs.
Have you heard Ted Levine in other things?
I have. I've worked with him.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
It's a little bit like that, right?
I mean, a little bit. I'd have to go back.
I saw him do a movie called Georgia with Jennifer Jason Leigh, and I saw it right after Silence of the Lambs, and he plays like a very kind of like benign stay-at-home dad, right? That's his part. So, and it's so creepy because he's got lines
scares
like...
Scares the shit out of you.
Yeah, because he's like, yeah, listen, I put Ginny to bed early because she didn't eat her dessert. And Tommy was able to, I read him a bedtime story and I tucked him in and it's like, oh, get away
from
this.
Did you send me the Silence of the Lambs Lego put in the basket song? Did you send me that?
Maybe.
I played it for him.
Oh, really?
And he never heard it. He loved it.
He was laughing
his ass off. And
so he's okay with that, Buffalo Bill.
He's totally cool. He knows, you know, it's sort of, I'm sure it haunts him a little bit. He was in Jesse James too, in Single Shot.
That's right.
And he's a great guy. And we had to flip this calf in Single Shot. And he was able to do it. I think I was only able to do it like maybe once. And because he lives on a farm.
Oh, wow. So he's that guy.
Yeah.
I had heard that he couldn't get work for a while after Silence of the Lambs.
Is that true? Yeah.
That's what I had heard. But you.
And then he was on Monk and.
That's right. He was in Jesse James.
Yeah. He got typecast probably. Yeah.
Do you remember? I remember dropping you off for the audition for Jesse James. My brother and I dropped you off.
I'll
never forget.
What was that doing? Yeah,
this is one of the great actors. And he's. You were running across Sunset because Sam doesn't.
Yeah.
It's safe to say you don't drive. That's fair to say, right? It's a fact.
Oh, yes. I drive. I drive my,
You drive your girlfriend crazy.
But I drive in films and stuff. I don't drive because I live in New York City.
You only drive in films.
But yes. Exactly.
So you're able to drive.
I know how to drive. I don't know how to drive a stick shift.
I don't think I've ever.
I had a license for a long time.
But like we're good friends.
Actually.
I've known you for 20 years.
I've cut that part out because then they won't let me drive.
No, okay. All right, we'll cut it
films.
Out.
Okay. I still need to make a living driving in films.
But I've never driven in a car with you. This is strange. We've known each other over 20 years. I've never...
I only drive when I'm paid for it.
Okay. So we were picking you up. And before Uber, you relied...
on taxis, yeah.
And friends.
Yeah.
So we were Ubering you and happy to do it. But I remember you scampering across the street and you had like cowboy getup, like kid wear, like toy cowboy gear.
Did I have like squirt guns?
Yeah. You had like a red.
Yeah.
Little pea shooters.
I didn't get that part.
Oh, you didn't get that part.
I got another part.
That's right. Then they wanted you for another part. But that's a good example of the part you're playing then is not, maybe not on paper, the showiest part, the flashiest part. But I think that's what people connect to with a lot of your work. You're able to make these people these kind of, you know, maybe less desirable on the surface parts, really human. And that's something
I want to make out.
Yeah. We can, by the way. We're not being filmed. You work harder than anybody I know that I've seen.
Well,
what is it like? So when you did that, when you do any part, I mean, how do you approach it? What is your, I've seen a lot of scribbles.
Well, you know, I think that you've trained as an actor and I've trained as an actor. I did Meisner training and you know, it's like, and we've done theater and that's a training in itself. And, you know, I think that the training really informed, because I was just kind of fucking around until I was in William Esper, and then
and that was when you were in your 20s, early
in my 20s, 91, and then I was doing some theater, and then I did the Meisner training for 2 years, and I met Terry there and Maggie Flanagan, these two teachers there, and Bill was an amazing teacher, and that was like the buds training for me, and so to speak, and then it went on, you know, and from there, I think I stayed working with Terry, and so I was able
to... You still work with the same coach. I mean, this is...
Yeah, I work with Terry Knickerbocker. He's a Meisner coach, and he was one of William Esper's proteges. Now he has his own school, and Maggie Flanagan was the same. I trained with her a little bit.
So the work itself is just...
Yeah, I need structure. So yeah, I lay out times where I can read it out loud. I tape my lines. I go to see Terry. I FaceTime with Liz. Right now I'm doing this TV thing where I got to play a real person.
So you're doing Bob Fosse.
Playing Bob Fosse. And that's there's a lot involved with hair and makeup. And
does that get in the way? Is that the challenge?
It's a challenge for me as I'm a very fidgety person. And so in the hair and makeup chair, it's tricky. Uh-huh. The most daunting was George Bush because he's so famous. So everybody has an opinion on
reference.
What he sounds like, yeah. You know, like Elvis Presley or Marilyn Monroe or, you know, nobody knows what Abe Lincoln sounds like. Nobody knows.
Yeah, that's true. So how did you go about that then? Was it a matter of, and not make it an impression?
I think that the thing that you see when you see people who play real people very well, mm-hmm. you know, I think the main thing you're seeing that has to penetrate through the impression is the truth, the intention of the scene, and the heart and soul of the actor has to punch through the impression, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I feel like if you just see the impression, you're lost.
Did that inform how you approached Bush? I mean, did you approach him as an anti-hero or?
Well, I just think that the movies that I grew up on, the heroes were incredibly flawed, you know, mm-hmm. The Deer Hunter. Mm-hmm. And Sophie's Choice, you know, Raging Bull, these are all very flawed people, you know, and so, but they're heroic and they're also very flawed. And so I think that that's interesting, you know.
With Bush, did you talk to him? Were you able to, was it just a matter of watching a lot of footage? Did you have an opinion about him that you used?
I found him very charming. I was surprised how charming I found him. And you know, I really thought he was just a guy who was in over his head with these master politicians.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that sort of struck me.
As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over. Because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up and we'll meet again.
There were a lot of questions about Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy on Twitter. People want to know, you know, about the two different...
I love that movie. It's such a weird movie, but...
Approaching a part like that, how different is it from...
Oh, man.
Doing, because that's like a... You can see, that's like a wacky comedy, whatever.
Yeah, but, yeah. That was really eclectic. I mean, I remember watching George Bush, Bill Clinton, Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, yeah, McConaughey was in
Vince
there.
Vince Vaughn.
Yeah.
A little bit of Woody Harrelson. And then I remember watching Freddie Mercury and... I feel like there's a little Brad Pitt in there. But the one thing, I watched Jim Carrey in The Mask.
Oh, right.
a lot. And I watched some Will Ferrell. I mean, I watched everything.
People who were, those seem to be all people who are like untamed. Like yeah. they don't have any structure.
Yeah.
So, and then that other head was a little bit more pragmatic.
And Eddie Murphy in The Nutty Professor. His alter ego, I think, is really, I've stolen a lot from that. That a couple of times when I did Better Living Through Chemistry, I watched The Nutty Professor. I watched the Jerry Lewis one. And Eddie Murphy. So I steal a lot of shit.
I'd steal from the best.
From the greats, yeah. You know. Bill Murray, Richard Pryor, Eddie Murphy, you know, De Niro, you know, John Voight. I always say to young students, I say, you know, watch, the men should watch the women and the women should watch the men. I always think that if you're a young actress, you should watch Raging Bull. If you're a young actor, you should watch Sophie's Choice.
Like, oh, interesting.
Bob Hoskins once said something about if you want to play a tough guy, and my teacher said this too. Bob Hoskins said he would watch, you know, he was more interested in women when he was watching. There's something about tapping into that vulnerability. If you're a tough guy, underneath that, I think, is all these kinds of, that's what Gene Hackman was great at too, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's something that my teacher said once, and I never forgot that. And, you know, Gene Hackman always also said, I try to find the simplest way to tell the story. And what I start with, how am I similar to this guy? Start with that.
Huh.
And then whatever I'm not, whatever's not similar, then you got to make that part up. You got to fill that in, you know?
So how were you similar to Bush?
Well, I'm not a Southerner, and I play all these Texans, and I had done a Texas accent, and so that I wasn't worried about.
You were mentioning a lot of these movies that you grew up with, and I know Christopher Walken has been like a big part of, a big influence for you. In fact, when I met you, I knew that early on that he was a big part of your, big part of the reason why you know, you're an actor, he meant a lot to you. Will you favor us with the story of, because I get it wrong when I tell it. Sam stayed next door to Chris Walken at the chateau, and you, in an attempt to meet him, is this possible to tell?
Yes. So we were in the elevator, and
well, wouldn't they call you? Because wouldn't Walken call down to the kitchen?
He called down to get milk for his cats or something. I had heard he was getting milk for, I had heard he travels with like 20 cats. I've since become friends with him.
Yeah.
And I don't think this stuff is true, but we were down. It was Ivan, my friend Ivan, and Catherine, his girlfriend, and there's a balcony that shares with another room, another balcony, and I would go to look.
Sam was in like a corner room, and on the other corner room that next door, it had a wraparound balcony, right?
Yes. And so I would sometimes peek onto the part of the balcony, which was not my balcony, to get a view of Sunset Boulevard and kind of check out what's going on downstairs. And sometimes I would just look to see if there was anybody in there so I could go over to their balcony. And then one night I saw the silhouette that looked like, you know, Count Dracula or something.
In the neighbor's room.
Yes, in the neighbor's room.
Did you know that he was staying there?
I feel like I might have known. I quickly walked away and went back to my part of the balcony. The next day, there was a cat box dividing the two balconies as to be two balconies instead of one.
So it was clear that someone put those litter boxes to separate. Yeah, okay.
Saw him, and we ended up getting an elevator with him. We rode the elevator, and we tried to sort of be kind of cool about it. And then we were like, it's a very small elevator. And then I said something like, he said this to me, I don't know, he wouldn't probably remember this, but...
You didn't bring it up with him?
I haven't talked to him about this story, but he said, because we did a play together and a film together, and we're now friends, and
this is way before
that. And he said, there was a long silence, and Ivan and Catherine and I were just trying to be cool and be like, don't say anything, don't blow it, you know. We're in the elevator with Chris Walken, we're in the other one. And that's what we're thinking, and there's a long silence, and he goes, I put the cat box outside so the cats don't get out. And I almost felt like he was trying not to hurt my feelings or something. Like he was saying, that's for the cats. That's not so you won't come on my balcony.
Oh, I see. You know, that wasn't a sign.
You jag off.
Yeah.
But no, so I was like, so I went, oh yeah, you have a lot of cats, don't you? Do you have like, you travel with a lot of cats, like 20 kitties? No. And then I was like, there's another long silence. And then we were, I think it was very awkward, but then we got out of the elevator and we walked, and Catherine and Ivan and I walked behind him, but we were going the same way.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But we had already said bye.
Because he said, the elevator bye. Door opened, he goes, okay, well, bye.
Okay, bye. And so, then he kept walking, and of course, we're going in the same direction.
That's an awkward thing. You don't want to like say yeah. bye again. You've already established.
No, you want to say bye again. So I tried to make funny, and I said, so if the cats get out, should I get like a net or something? And he went, no. And they walked in. That's pretty much the story. The first time I had interactions with the great Chris Walken, yes.
And that now that it's you've worked with him so much and you've become
yes.
so close that like
yes.
now he, you know, he just called you guys hang out, which I still can't believe. Were you able to tell him what he meant to you growing up and what a big influence he was?
I think we had these 10 minutes backstage where I was going on and he was leaving and we would sort of read the newspaper and hang out together mm-hmm. and we would talk about stuff and he would tell some great stories. And one day we're having a coffee break and Martin McDonagh's there and Zoe Kazan, Anthony Mackie, we're hanging out and our director John Crowley and we're just having some tea or something and he goes, I would have made a great pope. I would have been very lenient. And so Martin McDonagh heard that.
This is just out of nowhere?
Out of nowhere. Oh. And he put that in the movie Seven Psychopaths.
Oh.
Chris Walken says that.
That's awesome.
And we're high on mushrooms in the movie when he says that.
Wow.
So Martin took that. So like that's...
Martin must have been like, well, where else, how else does this make sense? They'd have to be on mushrooms. High on
The thing is, he's brilliant in that film, Nick of Time. And he's, you know, the thing people forget about, they think of, you know, the more cowbell and all that sort of Pulp Fiction, but they forget that he was a leading man. He back in the day, you know, the Dead Zone and the Deer Hunter. I mean, he was a big, tall, good looking guy. He done a lot of Shakespeare. He was a musical theater guy. Like he was a leading man. And he wasn't this, you know,
character. Yeah. But, well, who's still on? So you got Walken and now you're Gary Oldman's your pal. Who's on your list?
That was fun to hang out with.
Who's on your actor?
Gary Oldman. Yeah. We spent a lot of time together last year. That was really cool.
While you were going through the awards stuff.
Yeah, that's the cool thing about that award stuff is that they'll show these reels at these things like there'll be the Palm Springs Film Festival and they'll show Willem Dafoe's sort of like clips from his career or Gary Oldman's career. I remember there was this Hollywood award thing and we were all talking and chatting and drinking beer and then backstage and then the Gary Oldman's clips came on. And everybody just shut up.
Wow.
And we just watched his body of work.
Wow.
And it's just...
It's like a slow clap at the end.
It was like, it was just astounding. Yeah, his body of work is just astounding.
Well, I remember, this is not, Drew Barrymore told me the story about casting you in Charlie's Angels.
She's a great lady.
She's a great lady and she... But Justine Baddeley, who was the casting director, Drew told me that she said, who are those three guys? Because she saw three different photos. And Justine said, this is who we're considering for this part. And she said, well, which one? We're like, who among those three? And she said, Justine said, they're the same guy. And there were three different pictures of you. Do you know this story? It was like you from maybe Green Mile. Three different.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So when you talk about, I think amazing. A lot of, you know, younger generations think, which must be weird for you, think of you in those terms, the way you think about Gary Oldman and will one day see, you know, something like that and feel the same way that you feel about Gary Oldman. So I think you, see you still get excited about that is cool. It means, you know,
you and I are film nerds. We're theater nerds, right? Yeah.
And you've had a lot of experience now playing more straight man, leading man.
I've done a little bit of both as you have too, and it's fun to do that kind of dynamic.
Do you prefer playing like just a weirdo, eccentric?
I mean, I think it's fun to do both, and like it depends what the chemistry is, right? I mean, you know.
Yeah. How is Bob Fosse? I mean, how is that to?
It's very challenging. This Fosse thing. I'm working with Michelle Williams, who's amazing. Having a great time with her and Tommy Cale, who did Hamilton. Yeah. He's great. We're having a great time. The writers are great. Everybody's great. I think the only thing is there's a lot of time in the chair, and you got to sort of figure that out. And
the chair, you mean the toilet?
On the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What?
It's long hours, but it's good. Yeah. It's good. It's really good. We have these amazing choreographers. We're doing a little dancing. It's cool.
And you shaved your head.
These dancers are like superheroes. You know, I shaved my head.
Yeah.
These dancers.
But you love to dance. So were you out of your, do you feel like out of your depth still? Or are you?
Absolutely. This is a whole new realm.
Huh.
This is like, you thought you could dance and then, man, this is like something else. And to learn the Fosse vocabulary, which in short is like what Michael Jackson did.
Yeah. In fact, there's a great video for anyone listening where they show Michael Jackson dancing to what? I forget what it is, Thriller or something.
Yeah.
And then and it's side by side with Fosse from like the early 70s. You showed me this.
I
was blown away by how similar the moves are that he ripped off. And you say earlier,
Michael Jackson loved Fosse. He wanted Fosse to direct Thriller.
Uh-huh.
And but Michael Jackson, Bob Fosse said that Michael Jackson was one of the greatest dancers he'd seen since Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly. I mean, Michael Jackson was an amazing dancer.
I was blown away by how similar.
But he worshipped Fosse, Michael Jackson. He really,
Was there ever a thing you wanted to do outside of acting? Did you ever think like?
No.
From your earliest memory, it was acting.
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of got into it accidentally through my parents, and then I didn't really take it seriously. And then when I was an adult, I got into it. And then I just started ripping people off, like De Niro and all these people.
You were a kid,
Bob Fosse ripped off the Nicholas Brothers, this amazing dance team, and Fred Astaire, and everybody rips off everybody, you know?
What's your favorite movie of all time?
I mean, it depends. Comedic, I would say either Stripes or Animal House, and then dramatic probably Cuckoo's Nest or Deer Hunter off the top of my head.
Bill
Chinatown.
Murray,
I mean, there's so many. It's hard to.
Bill Murray was a big influence, and specifically when you did The Way, Way Back.
Yes, I copied him in Meatballs and Walter Matthau, Bad News Bears, and a little bit of Richard Pryor in Bustin' Loose, this movie Bustin' Loose with him and Cicely Tyson. And there were a few others. I mean, I'm a thief.
Yeah, but in the sense that you were so kind of off the cuff. You had this kind of glib.
Well, Bill Murray and Meatball specifically is almost, the relationship is almost identical between and the boy. I mean, that's a pretty obvious thing.
That's right. He takes him under his wing and he senses that he's been alienated. Where would you, other than LA and New York, where, if you could live somewhere, where would you want to live?
San Francisco. You and I have spent some good times there. San Francisco is a great town.
Yeah, you love San Francisco.
What about you?
I would say New Orleans, Austin.
Yeah,
I love
Austin's. You had a house there. Austin's great.
You grew up in San Francisco. You grew up. I remember you would show me where. You know, this is where I had my first date. This is where I had. That's where you.
Yeah.
You were also part of a group of kids that were like. Was it like Fame? Were they like?
Yeah, it was kind of a low budget Fame, but it was also inner city kids from everywhere. So there were the kids from the Mission. And
was it intimidating?
Very intimidating. I mean, I got beat up a lot as a kid. I mean, there were a lot. But the rich kids would come in and commute to the School of the Arts. But it was still a public school. So it was very eclectic group.
Yeah.
Very eclectic. Very interracial. Very financially, the kids were all in different places.
Huh.
It wasn't like just rich. It was like a lot of poor kids, a lot of like middle class. It was very eclectic.
So it was cool to be an artist.
But the artist part was only, I'd say, like 20% of the school. So the rest was a public school. Or maybe more than that. But like, you know, but Margaret Cho came.
That's
there,
right. And
Aisha Tyler.
Aisha, yeah.
Yeah.
So were your friends then mostly actors?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Aisha and I dated for a while and we were an improv troupe with Margaret and
San Fran, and you would live there. Music, what do you listen to relax? Do you get into music on set?
Enya.
That's what I figured.
What do you listen to? I remember listening to M Ward during Snow Angels. I was listening to M Ward.
Do you do that depending on the character? You like to switch? Yeah.
I don't know.
What's Fosse right? now? Fosse's kind of like...
Fosse.
Yeah.
Hey, big spender.
Yeah. On a loop.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do-do-do-do-shaboom.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled babbel.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply. If you run an e-commerce business, you know the amount of work it takes to produce something great.
So if you want to optimize your workflow and reduce costs, ShipStation is the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates wherever you sell online.
ShipStation's simple dashboard makes managing orders, smooth label printing, reporting, and customer service unbelievably easy.
With shipping configurations automatically applied, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online.
Plus, save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off UPS, DHL Express, and USPS rates. Over 130,000 companies have grown their e-commerce businesses with ShipStation.
ShipStation is the innovative tool that helps turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth.
Go to ShipStation.com and use code LONG to sign up for your free 60-day trial.
That's ShipStation.com, code LONG.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up we'll meet again.
If you had to be one age for the rest of your life, what would you pick physically?
I think 40 was physically the peak.
Oh, really? That's so good to know.
I think 40 was really...
Really? That's great.
And then after that, it was starting to fall apart. And now, I mean, I'm in pretty good shape now, but it's never going to be the same after 40. 40 is like a great... And mentally, 40 is a great age to be.
Oh, that's so good.
I really like being 40.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Vanilla chocolate.
I guess chocolate.
Dogs, cats.
Dogs.
Sweet, savory.
Oh, savory.
Mosquitoes, bees.
Oh, bees.
Who likes mosquitoes? What are mosquitoes good for?
Get them
population
out.
Population control? They kill. I mean,
maybe that. That's about it.
Wine, beer.
Oh, I like them both. That's tough.
Really?
One. I like, but I'm kind of a snob.
Oh, this was a question for the people. I thought you were going to say beer.
I'd say beer, but I love a good Barolo too, man. I love it. Yeah.
You are the biggest beer snob I think I've ever known.
I am.
Snob is an inherently negative word, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
you're a connoisseur.
But I am an elitist.
A beerist.
With beer, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You love trying the different ones. Yeah. I'm surprised. Okay. Well, subway cab.
Oh, I like the subway, but If there's no traffic, I like a cab. Love breezing through the Brooklyn Bridge on a cab.
How is it now? Do people have you been getting is it people coming up to you more?
I mean, it's the same kind of stuff. I think it's always like really it's mostly really nice, I think, except if you're in a hurry, right? Isn't that sort of the one time you're like, if you're in a hurry,
I know, but
it's not the best thing. But if it's great, if you're not in a hurry, it's great. I mean, you can pretty much. It's mostly good, I would say.
Mostly good, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember the one time I was in a hurry. This was right when things started. I started acting and things that people were seeing, and I was late for a train in Grand Central.
Yeah.
And this guy came up to me, and I'd been getting a lot of like, did we go to school together? Like, it's killing me. Where do I know you from? I still do get that.
Yeah, we all get that. Yeah.
And so I would say, oh, where'd you go to school? Oh, Oregon. Oh, I went to school in Connecticut. But what do you do for a living? And eventually get to the point where like, oh, I saw you in a thing, whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm running for a train, and this guy comes up to me and he goes, did we go to school together? And I was like, and I was late in my defense. So I was like, and so I said, no, I'm an actor. You probably know me. You probably saw me in something. And he goes, oh, really? What were you in? And I started listing, you know, my, at the time, really limited resume. I was like, this, that, no. What about this? No. And he goes, did you grow up in Fairfield, Connecticut? I said, yeah, I did. Riverfield Elementary School. Yeah, I did go there. I not only did I know him, but we had been friends in first grade, and he moved out of town. It was so embarrassing.
Schmuck.
And I said, oh, you, oh. And here I am like, I don't know, I'm an at, you probably know me from my work. And and we were friends in first grade. And the worst part was he goes, oh, so you're acting now? That's cool. You know, I do occasionally get people. There was a really sweet, sometimes.
Who the hell do you think you are?
I got one recently, which was a really sweet girl. And she was like, that was really nice. Like, oh my God, you're the guy who was in the thing. I said, yeah. And she said, what do you do now? And I said, oh, well, you know, still acting. And she goes, huh.
That's kind of fun in a way, though. And sometimes it's kind of fun because it's like.
Yeah, you could be anybody now.
Yeah.
Beatles, Stones.
Oh, fuck. What is these? That's not a fair question.
These are quick. These are just don't think about it.
Stones right today, but maybe okay. Beatles tomorrow. God, that's a tough
okay, that's all right. Spring, fall.
Fall. God, you're laying some tough ones.
Sunrise is sunsets.
Sunrise.
Your epitaph. What do you want it to read? Or do you want
to call me?
A racial epitaph.
What epitaph? What is an epitaph?
For your tombstone.
Yes. No rock unturned, I guess would be
that's
something.
Good.
Maybe that's it.
That's good. And is there a real person that you want to play? You've now played Bush, Fosse.
I dare say this.
Chuck Barris.
But I'm too old is Elvis Presley. I'd love to play Elvis Presley, wouldn't you love to play Elvis Presley? You could play Elvis. Vince Vaughn could play. You could play a version of Elvis.
A version of him. I guess kind of like that Spider-Verse thing.
Colin Farrell.
A version of him.
Colin Farrell played Elvis. I mean, should play Elvis.
Yeah.
And I think Vince Vaughn should play Elvis.
Those make sense. Yeah.
Well, okay, maybe you and I should play Elvis. But
you could play Elvis.
I don't know if I should play Elvis, but.
Somebody said on Twitter, Cinephile Femme said, this is a good question, and I'm curious about this myself. What went through your mind when you accidentally dropped an F-bomb in that hilarious SNL skit?
Oh, that was panic. Yeah.
Oh,
but
did you panic?
I played through. I mean, I was...
You would never know.
I played through, but it was definitely like, I thought I was like going to be in trouble.
And were you at all? Did they say anything?
No, they were like, don't do that again. Uh-huh. But basically...
but playfully.
Was, yeah, it was like, you know.
Right. A girl named Kyla wants you to say hi to her.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay, that's good. And then this was interesting. It's people are asking about Galaxy Quest.
I love you so much, man. I love you.
People ask about Galaxy Quest sequel. People say, is it going to happen without Alan?
Yes, well, that's right. We were almost going to do it, right?
We were, yeah.
I think they're still thinking about it. You know, that's a tough shoes to fill. What a great guy.
I know. Alan was going to do... Yeah, and Alan was
he was such a beautiful guy.
Yeah, another one on Galaxy Quest who I didn't know anyone, and he was also very kind to me when we did that. And I did a play that he was leaving, so I took over for a care, and he wrote me a letter. It was a really nice letter, and I opened it. I was like excited. It was from Alan Rickman. I opened it, and the card just said, it was a beautiful like sunset background, and in like very small, like ornate cursive, it just said, fuck you.
That's awesome. Well, you know, he helped me with Charlie's Angels a little bit.
Oh, that's right. You talked to him about Die Hard.
Liev Schreiber. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you want to talk about that?
Well, I gave him the script and he said, I said, I want to do all these things and this, you know, I don't know. Maybe I said like, I want to have a cape or something. I don't know. Uh-huh. And he's like, keep it simple.
Fangs.
You know? He says, in Die Hard, I killed someone and then I ate a sandwich.
That's right.
And I was like, oh yeah. He says, keep it simple. And
that's right.
I remember that. And he took the time to read the script, and there were like 17 versions of that script, but he read the script and That was very nice. And
he's right. That is something that's...
It's nice to get help from your friends. And he was a very prestigious friend to have at that time. And
yeah.
It's good to have you and I help each other.
Yeah, you gave me the best advice on when we were doing that play. Sam and I were doing a play and we had both had movies we were about to go do. And,
yeah.
And yours was Heist, David Mamet movie, which was... And so I would read lines
you.
Were
doing Jeepers Creepers.
So I was about to go do Jeepers Creepers.
Which is a really good film. It's a really scary film.
Well, at the time, you know, I felt really like... intimidated by the... Well, not intimidated. We were reading these great David Mamet lines. You know, I was helping you study and then we would read mine and I was kind of... I remember being kind of down on it because compared to the Mamet script, it was like... You know, we're getting chased by this monster and the dialogue wasn't quite as...
scintillating?
Yeah. So, and I remember being a little like self-deprecating about it and you said to me, you said, you got to treat this like it's Hamlet. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
You said,
I think I do remember. We were living in the house in Williamstown. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a really great lesson and I'll never forget it because, you know, no matter how, what the script is like, no matter how, who... You know, you still have to be that committed to
but
it.
But you're great in that movie. And that movie's rocking. It's scary as shit.
Yeah,
and
thanks,
it's
man.
It's really terrifying, that film. But and you go there, you know, it's like...
Well, it's a good lesson to commit, you know, that you commit to it like it's something. And I was, I guess, pretentious at the time where I thought like things had to be if it wasn't the... Whatever. It was a really good, good lesson. I thank you for that. And just in terms of working with people who... Now, if you were to put together like a... What play would you do? You want to do Shakespeare? You want to do?
That's a good question. I don't know. What I'd love to do, like Streetcar on film or something. Sometimes you don't get those characters in film. You know, when you do Neil Simon or Tennessee Williams or Martin McDonagh. You know, those are great words. What kind of part would you like to play?
I just want to do that. I'm doing the part. I want to do that in a movie. I'm getting to do a part now that I never thought I'd get to play, a guy who's deeply flawed and he's a real fuck up and that's a lot of fun. This is a good
intense.
This is somebody wanted to know on Twitter as well, if they could make if you could greenlight a sequel to any movie that you've already done.
Jesus. Safe Men.
Oh God, that'd be great. So Safe Men for you guys who haven't seen it. It's with Steve Zahn and great cast. Mark Ruffalo's in it.
That would be the one.
Okay,
definitely, no question.
Safer Men.
Safer Men. Coming to a theater near you.
I would definitely see it. And who's the great director who did that? The guy, John Hamburg.
Grab your tights and I don't know. Dot.
This
it's Safer Men.
Somebody. And then the third one is the Safest Man. This is somebody who... This is a good question. This is Agnes... This is a cool name. Agnes de Savigny. I hope I'm saying that right. I'm probably not.
Hey, Agnes.
The first time I saw Sam Rockwell... I'm going to do my impression of... I won't.
This is the first time I saw Sam Rockwell was in...
That's exactly how Agnes
That's a pretty good Agnes impression. Right?
Absolutely. That's
it was in Tom DiCillo's Box of Moonlight. Not only did Sam steal every scene, even playing opposite John Turturro, but he played them all wearing a buckskin suit. I wonder... This is Agnes, but I also wonder how much that outfit informed his character and other costumes since. That's a good question.
Pros to buckskin.
Yeah.
Great in the cold, not so great in the heat. Pros and cons of wearing buckskin.
So it wasn't like you put that on and you're like, God, now I'm like this feral, because you played this real like feral, like country bumpkin kind of guy.
That was a great, Tom DiCillo did a cool, we decided to put like a little bird turd on his outfit. I don't know if you can see it. It's really, that was a funny idea.
It's just funny hearing that bird turd.
There's a little like white bird turd on his on his buckskin Davy Crockett outfit. But yeah, that was just a really fun. I watched Gary Busey for that. I remember watching Gary Busey for that in something where I thought Gary Busey had this energy. I saw this movie he did where he played this like hunter or something.
Huh.
And there's this kind of false bravado that character has. Bucky has this weird...
Oh, wow.
And then Tom DiCillo told me to watch Joe Buck in Midnight Cowboy.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So when I initially did it, I did it with a Southern accent. And he said, cut the Southern accent, but do
just
that.
Just this innocent, this kind of like childlike...
Yeah, like, you know,
That
thing that Joe Buck had in Midnight Cowboy. Like
a sense of wonder, kind of like...
Yeah.
Yeah. Why would you abandon... Yeah.
Yeah.
So who's left? Who have you not... who are the greats that you've yet to?
Well, I'd love to work with Meryl Streep.
That's right.
I'd love to get a chance to work with Meryl Streep sometime. And
well, I'm sure
she's a bunch of people.
She's probably
Holly
listening.
Hunter is a great actress. You know.
Yeah.
I'm sure she's.
Yeah.
Oh, you think Meryl's listening?
I would assume she is. Yeah. Are you excited for? You might be nominated for more things. Are you looking forward to? Was that? Are you looking forward to going through that again, or is it? I mean, I know there are pros
and
cons.
Well, it's fun. It's a fun. Those are fun parties.
Yeah.
And then it's a lot of. You know, it's scary.
Yeah.
To, you know.
But isn't it like now, is it scary now? Because you've done it. You've already been through it. You won one. By the way, where is that? What do you do with that thing?
I have it right here.
Oh, yeah.
I carry it with me. Guys.
Guys, you can't see this, but Sam's got it around his neck. He's made a gold chain.
No, that stuff is so sort of beautiful and crazy and scary. It's such a great, that's such a weird thing, you know, and I remember Phil talked about that with us one time. I remember he talked about, you know,
how much it was the downside to it, the stuff that you don't really consider when because everybody wants one, everybody, even if they say it's not about awards.
Yeah.
And I was having one of those moments where I had been nominated for this thing, or they was talk about, and I was embarrassed to reveal that to him because
that's
I always thought he was above that, you know, somebody like that.
No,
would
that's
be.
Right. We talked. That's right. I remember that. And he was very cool about talking about that stuff.
He was very candid and very honest. And so I wonder, how it changes, and if you're looking forward to that, or is it like, well, if it happens, it happens, and
it's cool, but it's also. You know, like, how do you make a, you know, it's hard to make a competition out of. There's no, as Steve's on, there's no finish line.
Yeah.
Should we make out?
Yeah, well, we already did, but I guess we can again. I guess we have been for the last hour and half. Man, thanks.
Hey, man.
I was just going to say one thing about all that award stuff, and I said it to you recently. But... You know, I've seen people go through different phases, and I've been through one. You go through changes, things happen, you get a little celebrated, you go ebbs and flows and all that. You haven't changed, and that's like a crazy thing, and I want people to know that. I want people to know that could have really, you know.
What's your name again?
Fuck. Shia LaBeouf.
I love your work.
But thanks. I love you.
Love
and,
you,
and thank you guys for listening, and... You know,
I love this man. I love you, man.
Hopefully there'll be more.
There maybe be more. Yeah, maybe we'll follow this up.
Yeah, you'll be my guest every time.
Yes.
Welcome to the portion of the show called That Just Happened. It's not really called that. I'm saying that ironically, but it may in fact end up being called that.
Or, I mean...
I can't even.
That time you interviewed Sam Rockwell. Yes.
So that time I interviewed Sam Rockwell, what did you think of it? If it were a meme.
I picture you, like, doing, like, a Macaulay Culkin, like, hands to the face. I know that you were nervous going into that.
I was nervous. It was weird to be nervous talking to a friend.
But I will say, I don't think it showed. I guess you are an actor. You were good at...
I was acting with my friend. I was acting. I was nervous, but I was acting like I wasn't nervous. This is like a really good indication of who Sam is. This is a really good, it's not much of a story, but Sam used to live on an apartment just off on 8th Street off of 6th Avenue. And it was a tiny little, it couldn't have been more than like 300 square feet, tiny, and slept on a futon. And he would always be like, hey, come on over. You want to sleep over? And so, which meant he'd want you to have the futon and he would sleep in like a sleeping bag on the floor. And there were boxes. Sam loved cereal all lined up. And he had, the walls were just like covered with photos of his friends. That's Sam's family. And when he finally moved into a bigger apartment, the decorations on the walls became the same photos that he had all smushed together in the old apartment, just like spread out. So there'd be one every like 3 feet, like a photo of one of his friends. It was really charming.
Were the cereal boxes spread out too?
No, because the kitchen was the same size. Oh. It had a small kitchen, but he loved, and then like movie memorabilia, you know, he's really into, in fact, he got me one of the few things in my apartment, which is a poster of the Flamingo Kid. He got Matt Dillon to sign it for me.
But I think that story is really important because it illustrates who he is and how he hasn't changed. I think that's, it's a really good example of, you know,
it's not a great story, but
it's a good indicator yeah. because, you know, after all his success and, you know, making more money and all that, right. he's still,
he can go out and buy like fancy,
he still has the same friends and he, yeah. he didn't like trade up and start hanging out yeah. with like, you know,
yeah,
who knows?
yeah. With the Dalai Lama.
Yeah. yeah. Dignitaries.
Which we've both seen. I mean, yeah. I've seen that happen to people I know and, yeah, to the point where he is, yeah, it's bizarre how little he's changed, and a testament to what his character. There's something so innocent about Sam.
Yeah, I noticed this, and this is not a visual medium, so I don't know if this will translate. But I was watching the interview, and I've noticed this about him before. When he's talking to someone, he has this way of like studying their face and their expressions, and I can see him.
He like shows his lower teeth.
I can see him. I can see him digesting someone's countenance, you know, and someone's mannerisms and. He's such a like a student of people, yeah. and you could see him.
He's like a sponge of human behavior.
Which again, in the interview, I thought it was so interesting how much he talks about how he steals from the great actors, from yeah. De Niro and all these people. But I see him steal from just random people that he's talking to in a way, and mm-hmm. I wonder if he how much of that he realizes. You could see him sort of like really
taking cues,
just zoning in on someone's. Face,
yeah,
you know, and he has sort of like little smirk this. When he's unsure of something. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. yeah you're, but see, you're I, doing I'm it really well right now.
Well, and I wish you guys could see this. But I find myself doing it too. I have a similar. I've stolen things from Sam. I mean, I listen
from Sam.
From Sam.
You even
that's
did
from
it
Sam.
Just now? Yeah,
yeah. Weird. Tremendous. Yeah. I mean, especially when I'm around
he
him.
He has
for
such
a while.
A unique. He has such a unique cadence. Yeah. I think. Like Christopher Walken. I mean, I think they're similarly unique.
Yeah, oh my God. I mean, a lot of it is, oh my God. It's tremendous. Yeah. Oh yeah. He's also, and sometimes when I have outbursts of, oh my God. Like that's Sam. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Or yeah. when he's listening, it's, oh my God, yeah.
Or not fully listening, you know. Just, like kind of, instead of listening fully to the question, he's studying the way that someone's saying something. Yeah. That's what struck me. It almost seemed at times he was more aware of how you were saying the question yeah. than what the content of the question was. You know what I mean?
And he gets this like knowing smile. Yeah, yeah. yeah
he's got
yeah.
this sort of innocence about him. You know, he's got this.
He's a scamp.
Which I found interesting that he said that the age that his body age
40.
That he'd pick forever would be 40 because yeah. he always struck me as someone... Like such a Peter Pan, someone who's so sort yeah. of innocent and again, which I'm sure helps his acting, that he has he's this sort of open book, this sort of like has this naive spirit about him.
Yeah, there's also he embraces moments. Sam is very good at being, I mean, Phil was like that. I mean, but both of them share this. They have, they laugh with real abandon. When they find something funny, Phil had this laugh that was just... I mean, he laughed the way he acted. I mean, he just was yeah. like complete and pure and
yeah.
like
honest.
So I can't thank him enough for having done that. And thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed that.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-boom.
Thank you for listening to Life is Short. If you like the show, please give us a 5-star review, at least 4 stars. And tell your friends to subscribe. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and every major listening app, as well as Wondery.com. Our theme song is performed by our friend Harmar Superstar. Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long, produced by Christian Long and Megan Monaco. Senior producer is Michelle Lanz, executive produced by Marsha Louie and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
I've said a lot of gross things in my life, but and I've heard a lot of gross things, but I have never...
Oh, yes, that's what you
How can
say.
You be so
Because there's
certain...
no other place... I mean...
But Mom, wouldn't you think I would have heard of that?
Oh, it makes my ass water?
Yes.
No.
That really makes my ass water.
I remember you saying it would make my bladder bleed.
Or your brother, or but someone other
no,
one.
Oh, who else would I have heard, would say no. that in front of me?
In the sense that I'm like sarcastically...
Yeah, well, I don't really makes my ass...
Yes. I don't even know what it means. What does that mean? My ass water, like...
Well, it makes me so happy that...
But what does that mean?
I don't know.
I wouldn't have said something like that without... If I didn't even know what it means.
Oh, yes, you did. I don't know about you particular. Maybe it was the...
Oh, so
get out of here. I didn't... I I've never even, I don't know what it means.
Oh, Justin.
To have a watery ass is not a good thing.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
Be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.